Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready?
Hell yeah! Yeah, right!
Welcome to this edition of the Rebel Rise Live podcast. I'm David Johnson, along with your co-hosts, Dave Bevan and Michael Quirk. Guys, how y'all doing today?
I'm doing great.
Another day in paradise, David.
Paradise it is. You live in Oxford, Mississippi, God's country, as they like to call it. A little bit of drama in God's country this morning as the sun came up, as we all discovered Breland Speaks had a little bit of a late night, Thursday night, that bled into early Friday morning, and Speaks arrested early Friday morning, as I understand it, right off the square in Oxford. He is being charged with suspicion of DUI. Ole Miss head coach Hugh Freeze promptly issues the following statement, and I quote, "Breland's poor choice does not meet the expectations of our program, and there will be consequences. He and I have spoken, and he is very disappointed in himself and will accept whatever punishment that is handed down. We are very thankful he is safe and that this was not a life-altering decision. In these situations, we hope our young men learn from their mistakes and do not let the mistakes define them," end quote. So, an inauspicious way in regards to off-the-field problems to get spring practice underway, guys. Breland's been on this team a couple of years, probably should have known better. Unfortunate indeed, and we'll see what the consequences are for Breland Speaks. And, you know, the first thing that enters your mind, and many Ole Miss fans' minds, Michael, is that September 5th opening game against Florida State in Orlando, boy, it sure would be nice to have Breland Speaks playing defensive tackle in that game. But the way Hugh Freeze is sounding, there will be consequences, and you can imagine those consequences might include a game suspension.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's safe to say that we probably won't be seeing Breland Speaks in that game against Florida State. And there's going to be I'm not defending Breland's actions at all, but anytime there's a DUI with a college student in particular, there are folks that come out of the woodworks to sort of demonize the kid and his actions and say that he's attempting to murder people and all this. While it's an irresponsible move and a stupid decision, there's no malice in what the kid did. It was a horrible decision that could have had dire consequences. But, I mean, it always seems this way that whenever a kid gets a DUI, there's, oh, he's going out there trying to kill my family and this. The kid's young. He made a mistake. Hey, I'll bet he's having a worse day than anyone right now and is he's going to face the music on this one. And, yeah, I certainly don't think we'll be seeing him for Florida State, so that may mean some early snaps for Benito Jones to get his career kicked off.
I agree with you about the element of youth being involved, and we've all been there and we've all made those kind of mistakes. But I will say this, drinking and driving, there's very little difference in drinking and driving than just putting a bullet in a gun and firing randomly into a crowded area. In my opinion, I think it's something that has to be taken very, very seriously. And I'm not saying you're not agreeing with that, but there should be consequences for drinking and driving. And I'm not talking about football consequences. That's between Hugh Freeze and Breland Speaks. But, you know, I've seen some posts on the board about the those dadgum Oxford policemen just out to get the kid. You know what? I want every Oxford policeman everywhere in this country, if they can stop someone from being on the roads, the byways and the highways, drinking and driving, I want them to do that. That means they're doing their job, in my opinion. Michael, I'll toss it back to you. Any response to that?
Something that's a little strange about this situation is I believe I told one of y'all the other day, once I parked for the baseball game, I was over at the Manning Center, and I was walking out of the parking lot, and I had to pretty much jump out of the way of a car that was driving right at me, had to be going about 40 miles an hour coming into the parking lot. And I look back after I get my bearings, and it was Breland Speaks. I told a few folks, like, Breland Speaks almost killed me earlier today with his car, the way he was driving. And then I see this come out, and so Progressive Insurance is probably not too happy with Breland. But I agree that it's very irresponsible. And it's very dangerous, and we see that in the statistics all over the country with all these sort of deaths. But when you're loading up a gun and firing into a crowded area, you're sort of hoping that you hit someone, or you're doing it recklessly. This is sort of just, you know, hey, I can get home safely, don't have to pay for a cab, I'm not that drunk, I'm going to get there. It's a stupid decision, but I don't think there's any intent to harm anyone. I think it's just, you know, sort of not thinking the long term, and you always hear people say, hey, a cab ride's $10, a DUI is $10,000. So, it's really unfortunate that he's going through this, but I don't think it says any sort of character concerns for the kid or anything like that.
No, and I understand young people make mistakes, but explaining intentions to a family that has lost their mother to a drunk driver, or a family who has lost their child to a drunk driver, intentions do not matter. It's the act that matters. And anyway, I applaud law enforcement for doing their job, and I know there are a lot of Rebel fans that are sore this morning that something, it could have been handled differently, but that's just something I don't have very much tolerance for, having lost people I've cared about in drunk driving accidents. But nevertheless, it'll all be straightened out, rectified, and Breland will pay his consequences and learn something from this and move on, hopefully. So that's that. We wanted to address that at the top of the show today, because that is what is topical this morning. Anytime you have a player that steps out of line like that. Now, the one thing I do think that is, it's just the day and age we live in. I mean, these kids are scrutinized so much, these college athletes. The average college student doesn't face the scrutiny that these guys do. And, you know, if you step off the curb wrong down on the square, somebody's tweeting about it. And that part of it is all unfortunate. But, our thoughts are with Breland this morning. We hope hope everything works out fine for him. And applaud Hugh Freeze for stepping out front and getting out in front of this thing as it broke early this morning. Well, the Rebels had practice number 2 inside the Manning Center on Thursday. The media got to watch it, and I got to tell you, impressive. The thing that stood out to me more than anything, and just having some institutional knowledge of when Hugh Freeze first got here to where they are now, I remember that first spring, they wanted to go fast. They wanted to go fast so bad offensively. But it was oftentimes a calamity as Hugh was trying to install his rapid-fire, fast-paced offense in here at Ole Miss. Now it's like a well-oiled machine. I mean, I was really fascinated at how – this was practice, too – how quickly the Rebels were moving. Now, they were going against air, but still, how quickly they were moving yesterday during the team portion of practice – they've got it down pat. I mean, those big old offensive linemen, they run to their blocks and then boom, they huff and puff back to the line of scrimmage. The receivers are set. Quarterback's already got things going in his head, already got the play called. And it was really rapid fire. And to me, that stuck out to me yesterday big time. Chad Kelly, another thing to note, I mean, he looked in mid-season form, dropping dimes all over the field. Shea Patterson, unbelievable touch on the football. Jason Pellerin looks like a monster. I had 6'4", 235 pounds. He can run. Quarterback situation at Ole Miss is just in great, great shape. I was also impressed with the receivers. Of course, DeMaurier Stringfellow not out yesterday. Got a boot on his foot. Probably won't practice until after spring break. But DeMarcus Lodge, Quincy Adeboijo, Van Jefferson, all of those guys standing out, making some phenomenal catches yesterday, also greatly thrown balls. Things just looked really, really good for the Rebels inside the Manning Center. Dave, I know you'll be over on Monday. You'll get your first opportunity to see the team practice, and I know you're excited about that.
I definitely am, David. And, you know, as you mentioned, you know, it's exciting to see this team just building up and already looking like in mid-season form, just day two into practice. And, you know, the offensive line, that's a position group I'm highly excited to see about. I'm also, you know, really excited to see about on the defensive side, those areas of need. You know, one of the big questions heading into spring practice is that linebacker group. Are they going to find some adequate depth there? They're going to try some, you know, experimenting around this spring by moving 2014 signing class, Willie Hibbler, tight end, is moving from that tight end position over to get a shot at middle linebacker. So that will be interesting. And of course, Hibbler, he definitely has that body size for it. It's 6 foot three, 240 pounds, and then you know, he has the speed and athleticism to really contend in that position. So it'll be interesting to see that position group, the secondary, who are going to be those guys to replace, you know, defensive back leaders from last season like Mike Hilton and Trey Elston, who, you know, just had that senior leadership, you know, last year. There's going to be some new faces out there, some unexperienced in-game, but a very highly talented secondary. As you pointed out, David, Montrell Curtis looked really good yesterday in practice. Miles Hartsfield, those guys working in those safety position groups, they look, you know, very, very like they're already in, you know, ready for the season.
Well, and I want to point out as well, Willie Hibbler will get a little late start on his transition to linebacker as he broke his hand during some off-season conditioning drills, and probably going to be after spring break before Willie starts mixing it up out there. Ole Miss will practice in the first time Saturday morning in pads this spring. No practice today. The guys have the day off. They'll have position meetings Friday afternoon at the Manning Center, and then I believe it's scheduled for 10 a.m. Saturday morning. Of course, no public, no media for Saturday morning's practice as the Rebels get acclimated to bumping into each other once more. And Monday, pads on Monday, be a lot of fun to watch these guys go after it. It's always fun to watch the new guys at their first SEC-level contact. So that'll be something we'll have our eyes on Monday. Ole Miss baseball team out at Coastal Carolina this weekend. And as we're recording this podcast, the Rebels are actually playing baseball. And at this time, actually doing quite well, leading Ball State 7-2, and that ball game is getting late, bottom of the seventh, I believe. So looks like they're going to pick up the W in game one. Michael, tomorrow, though, game two, they play Coastal Carolina. It's number 13, Ole Miss, the number 19 Coastal Carolina team. And this is a big ball game for Ole Miss out there. Ball State, Cincinnati, the other two opponents. But Coastal Carolina presents a challenge for the Rebels tomorrow.
Yeah, there are some good signs today. I mean, but like you said, there's nothing really to – not too much to take from a game against Ball State. I mean, as we know, the further you get north, sort of the less talent you're seeing on the baseball field. And Ball State's really nothing to write home about. But Colby Bortles has been swinging the bat really well lately. He's been making a lot of good contact, just hasn't been falling. And he goes yard today for his first home run of the year. And Cameron Deshaun hits a home run. And Henry Larsigue, who's really struggled to start the year after absolutely killing it in the fall and early spring, he's reached base all four times today with, I believe, a walk and three singles. And so that's certainly a welcome sign. And, tomorrow's going to be a big game. Coastal Carolina is a quality opponent who is sort of a regular fixture in that postseason. And it's going to be a tough one. And it'll certainly be big for Chad Smith, who's coming off of a great performance against Louisville, albeit in a loss. He was really dealing. He just dealt with a buzzsaw that was Brendan McKay, who's absolutely incredible for the Cardinals. And so you're going to see Smith getting – his second straight really tough test this weekend. And Ole Miss fully expects to come out of this weekend with at least two wins, considering Ball State and Cincinnati has yet to win a game. And I really doubt their first one's going to come on Sunday morning with the Rebels. But you see Coastal Carolina tomorrow would be a really nice out-of-conference win and really help build that resume for the Rebels, who have – they have a lot of opportunities in the out-of-conference. They already have two huge, huge wins, probably the biggest series win so far in college baseball this year, with those taking 2 or 3 from Louisville. If they can get another ranked win over Coastal Carolina and down the road, Southern Miss, that could be, if they're able to take out the Eagles there, that would be another sort of resume-building win. So, it would be really nice for the Rebels to come out this weekend 3-0. But regardless, you're going to want to see Chad Smith pitch really well against the Chanticleers.
Chad Smith going tomorrow, and the Chanticleers, which is French for something. I know that. Michael, what is a Chanticleer?
A Chanticleer is it's an old wooden ship used in the Civil War era, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that one, though.
That's okay. You get a get out of jail free card on that one if you're wrong. The Chanticleers. I would have liked to have been a fly on the wall in the room when the powers that be at Coastal Carolina were going, what should we call our athletic teams? And someone in there, probably at a wine and cheese event, said the Chanticleers.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone else had drank enough wine that they nodded their head in agreement and the cat was out of the box. Pandora's box had been opened. That's the only logical reason I can figure out why a school from South Carolina would like to go by the Chanticleers.
You have the whole South Carolina coastline is first class, that just Southern elite with Charleston and Hilton Head and Beaufort and all that, and then you get up to Myrtle Beach.
Throw Myrtle Beach in there now, yeah. What about Myrtle Beach?
Myrtle Beach is the redneck capital of the world. We used to go there when I was a little kid. And so I know from experience, if you don't have Confederate flag board shorts at the beach, then you are definitely a sore thumb sticking out. So if there's one place in coastal South Carolina where Chanticleer does not make a lick of sense, it's Myrtle Beach. Well, I guess technically they're in Conway, but it's certainly not exactly fitting to the area.
Well, anyway, so we'll see how the Rebels do out there this weekend. Sunday, Sean Johnson will go to the mound. for Ole Miss. And Cincinnati, as you mentioned, winless on the season. They have not yet named a starter. And as you're setting down in church Sunday morning, this ball game will be underway. Reminder, it's a 10 a.m. Central Time start on Sunday for Ole Miss and Cincinnati. And tomorrow's game, I believe it's a 2 p.m. Central Time start, if I'm not mistaken. We'll post something up to clarify the times on that before the end of the day. No TV for any of this, as far as we know. Nothing will be streamed on video or anything of that nature. So you have the Ole Miss Radio Network and Twitter to follow all of the action. Well, a big basketball game up on Rocky Top. Big, I say that with a certain perspective right there. It's big for Ole Miss in that it could be victory number 20, Michael. It could improve their SEC tournament seeding. It definitely would give them some momentum heading into Nashville next week for the SEC tournament, where if they want to advance to the Big Dance, to the NCAAs, it's going to be like being on The Price is Right, spinning that wheel and hitting $1. That's the odds of it happening. The Rebels are going to have to run the table in Nashville, become SEC tournament champions to reach the NCAA tournament. But, Michael, Stephon Moody, Ole Miss's big-time scorer, ready to go up on Rocky Top on Saturday. But the news out of Knoxville this morning is that the Vols' big-time scorer not going to play against the Rebels.
Yeah, there's not going to be punter for Tennessee, which as we know with their football program, they've gotten really used to having a punter really contributing there. But they're not going to have a punter for the basketball team on Saturday. And if Ole Miss is able to come out with the win, not only will Stephon Moody almost undoubtedly lock up the scoring title for the Southeastern Conference, but Ole Miss will lock up that sixth seed in the SEC tournament. And you know, that's sort of where they want to be right now. When you look at who they're going to be playing in the first round, it looks like it'll either be a matchup against Mississippi State or against Tennessee. And so Ole Miss has sort of poised themselves. They've got a nice position going into Nashville that they could really make a little noise if the pieces fall their way. So, yeah, getting that 20th win, getting a road win, ending the year with a winning record in conference, having the conference's leading scorer. It's going to be, like you said, a little ingest of a big game. It doesn't exactly have NCAA tournament implications. But, it's certainly going to be an interesting one tomorrow. And that's also Ole Miss Sports is really – they're really pushing the brunch this weekend. Between all the early starts with baseball, I believe it starts. The baseball game on Sunday starts at 10 a.m. Central Time. The basketball game tomorrow is at 11 a.m. Central Time. They're just the square is going to be out of mimosas by the time we hit Monday.
Wow, yeah, because football practice starts around 10 o'clock Saturday morning, so everything will be in the books by mid afternoon. So
we're going to need some siestas.
Yeah, leaves the shank of the evening totally free for Ole Miss fans on a Saturday night, a rare occasion this time in the spring. That game tomorrow, Ole Miss at Tennessee from Thompson Bowling Arena, will tip off, as Michael said, 11 a.m. in the morning. Will be on television, the SEC Network, Tom Hart and Joe Dean handling the call for that one. And again, it'd be nice to see Ole Miss get to 20 wins because, Michael, we talked about it earlier this week, the NIT is no longer a guarantee for a 20-win Power 5 conference school with the new selection criteria where if you're playing in a mid-major conference and some of these conferences, if you win your regular season title and you get knocked out of your conference tournament where you're not going to the NCAAs, there are deals cut now. And the NCAA is running the NIT tournament now, where if you're a regular season champion of your mid-major league and you get punched out of your conference tournament early, you get an automatic bid to the NIT. So there are fewer at-large spots available in the NIT tournament.
Yeah, I believe an NIT ticket got punched last night with it was one of those mid-major schools that was I believe they were 19-15 and they were a regular season conference champion, and they lost to I wish I could pinpoint who this was, but there was at least one ticket punched last night, and so those slots are filling up quickly. But Ole Miss, if you look at the rest of the projected field, they should, unless there's, you know, a lot of surprises down the way when you get into who's winning those conference tournaments, who's taking those bids away there. Ole Miss should be soundly in that NIT picture with a victory tomorrow morning. And then, of course, you know, they'll just be playing for seeding once they get to Nashville, unless they're able to to quote one of my favorite movies, with a little paraphrasing, just win the whole dang thing. One of my favorite quotes from Major League, but none of my favorite quotes are really appropriate for air from that movie. But unless I win that whole thing and go to the NCAA tournament, they're sort of, you know, just sort of jockeying for position in the NIT and really hoping that they can get a hosting seed and get a game or two here in Oxford.
One thing I failed to mention yesterday at practice, Laramie Tunsil at the Ole Miss practice yesterday. Cody Pruitt was there as well. But Laramie walking around sporting a New York Giants beanie cap on his head. I'm sure that doesn't mean anything at all. But I sure would like to see Laramie go to the Giants. That's the team I've kind of followed ever since Eli Manning got there, which now is more than a decade ago. But Laramie at practice seemed to be in a really good mood watching his Rebels play practice, and Cody Pruitt out there as well. Cody looked a little slimmer than he has in the past, but he's still trying to catch up with an NFL roster, so doing a little workout in Oxford. But exciting times to see that football is back, even if it's just in a spring capacity. No spring game this year, though, guys, and you know, when is the moaning and complaining and groaning going to start from the Ole Miss faithful, and will it get loud enough that Ole Miss is going to have to figure out some way to let their fans see this team run some drills, throw some passes, pop a little weather at some point this spring? Because right now, guys, the vibe I get is that it ain't going to happen. There are no plans for the public to be able to see this football team. Dave, I mean, do you think the fans could raise enough cane about wanting to see these guys that something could materialize?
Oh, I think you're definitely going to hear about it come sometime around mid to late April, David. The Grove Bowl, annual Grove Bowl, usually comes out somewhere in between mid-April, so without that possibility this year, you know, and like you said, it just right now it just seems highly unlikely, because there's definitely not enough room, you know, to pack thousands and thousands of Ole Miss fans inside the indoor facility at the Manning Center. Not unless you were to sporadically at times let a few come in at a time and get their viewing and then move on. that would be the only possible way I would think you would people to be able to see things in the indoor facility, that amount of people.
I love the idea, like, man. Yeah, I could see that happening. Yeah, just a walkthrough. You come in one door, out the other, and just see what you see as you're walking through.
Yeah, you get you know, about 10 minutes of viewing, then you walk out the, you know, on the out the exit door, and then the next group comes in, and
well, so some of the fans will be fired up about not getting to see the team, but most are understanding in that the reason you're not getting to see this football team this spring is the fact that there's progress being made. The north end zone's getting bowled in, and guys, I took a gander at that yesterday.
It's definitely going to be It's definitely going to be well worth it for the fan experience, you know, having to If I'm looking at it from a fan's perspective, I'll take away, you know, one viewing of spring ball and get all of my resource from the media outlets and having that opportunity to see that enclosing expansion, nice, beautiful natural grass on Balt Hemingway Stadium. It's really exciting to think about, and I know a lot of fans are seeing it the same way that just even the expansion and the new look to the stadium is something exciting to think about, not only of how, you know, highly talented this team is already appearing heading into next season.
I took a look at it yesterday, some of the stadium expansion. It's amazing how much they've gotten done already. Certainly it'll be ready before kickoff, which will be September the 10th against Wofford, another small South Carolina college. That seems to be the theme of what we're talking about today. 5 days after the Rebels open up against Florida State, they come home for their home opener. And thank goodness it's Wofford that weekend and not Alabama on such a short week like that. Because, you know, when you think about it, that Monday night opener against Florida State, it's a late kickoff. You're not going to get back to Oxford by the time the plane flies back from Orlando to Tupelo. You get on a bus and you drive back to Oxford, the sun's going to be up. It's going to be coming up. I don't see any other way you can shake that with an 8 o'clock kickoff. You're not out of that stadium until after midnight. You're probably not in the air until 1:30, 2 a.m. in the morning. You're not landing in Tupelo until 5-ish, 5:30. And then, you're 6:30, 7 o'clock getting home Tuesday morning. And my point being, you're already on a short week by 2 days because you're playing on a Monday instead of a Saturday, and then you're going to lose Tuesday because the guys have got to go to class and they've got to get some rest and sleep. So basically, you're probably not going to start preparing in that week capsule for Wofford until Wednesday. And you'll have Wednesday, and you'll have Thursday, Friday's walkthrough, and then you play. So, you know, that's somewhat of a challenge right there. And then just the freakiness of opening up on a Monday is always, you know, who's going to handle that the best? Even though your rhythm for the season hasn't really started yet, that's still odd to play on a Monday night in a college football game. So, you know, there's a price to pay a little bit for some of these primetime games. Michael, what do you think about that? Monday night, then a home opener on a Saturday. And then, you know, lo and behold, you've got a week before your next game, but that's with Alabama.
Yeah, it's certainly a strange little schedule and start there. And like you mentioned about Monday kicks, it's strange. Florida State and Miami, they've played a couple times on Labor Day, and it was always sort of a strange game. And we saw that last season with Virginia Tech versus Ohio State. And Virginia Tech had really no business talent-wise being on the same field as the Buckeyes. And you saw them give them a real run on Monday night, which also, you know, Blacksburg, that's a tough place to play once they get Enter Sandman playing and the stadium gets rocking. But it's strange sort of things happen on Monday. It's weird to get into a rhythm and then coming back from that. And you're like you said, a short week. I guess we can thank the good Lord for the Rebels' sake that it's Wofford that's coming to town rather than the University of Alabama in week two. That first month is it's going to be very, very interesting to see how they're able to piece together that month. How they're going to find a rhythm, and Hugh Freeze likes to say, you go fight for 60 minutes and then you look up and see what the score is. It's going to be interesting to, when we get out of September, to look up and see what the Ole Miss record is.
You know how sometimes you're just scrolling along on Twitter and you see just the oddest news, the oddest items on Twitter? Twitter's always worth a gasp and a laugh. Here's something popped up 5 minutes ago by Mississippi State head coach Dan Mullen. It's a picture of his wife, Megan, and I've met her before. She's a very, very nice lady, with Republican presidential candidate John Kasich. So I guess Dan Mullen and his wife Megan, they're endorsing John Kasich, I suppose. It reads, "My wife Megan, excited to see a friend and proven leader she admires." Sounds like an endorsement to me, guys. Dan Mullen has entered the fray of the Republican presidential primary. That's dangerous ground.
I gotta give him credit for that. For going for Kasich. Kasich's really he's really struggling in the water right now, which is unfortunate to see, because watching last night's debate, he was definitely the most sane of anyone that was on stage, not really yelling over anyone.
Did you know John Kasich's dad was a mailman?
I think that gets brought up sort of like how Rubio talks about how his family came to America and the struggles they faced. There's a couple calling cards that politicians love to use to try and appeal to the everyman.
But you know what, though? I was talking to my wife about this, and, you know, every time John Kasich is in front of a camera, he's going to tell you his dad was a mailman. Admirable profession. But you know what else? A pretty damn good job to be a U.S. postal worker. I don't get what Kasich is trying to say right there. I mean, you know, my dad was a plumber, which was a pretty dang good job. But every time I talk, I don't say, you know, my dad was a plumber. Kasich tells everybody his dad was a mailman, and I think that's to try to tie him, connect him with the blue-collar, working-class, backbone of America people out there. But, you know, there are a lot of people hurting right now that wish they were a mailman, John Kasich, and that's all I got to say about that. But anyway, Dan Mullen endorsing John Kasich this morning. You heard it here first, or you saw it on Twitter like I did. One or the other. Dave, did you watch any of the Republican presidential battle royale last night?
I didn't get to check it out, David, but I could definitely go refresh myself on Twitter. And you definitely hear it first on Twitter. You definitely hear it first on Twitter before you do any media outlet. It's amazing how quickly things just surface on Twitter. So, you know, I did see the, you know, through my timeline yesterday of the Mitt Romney bashing, you know, Donald Trump, which I thought was interesting. You know, here's a guy who asked Trump to help him in his campaign 4 years ago, and now he publicly criticizes Trump. And
he also held a press conference to accept Donald Trump's endorsement 4 years ago. That's how hypocritical things have become in Washington. And you know, the whole world's marveling about how in the world is Donald Trump doing this, because he's not particularly sharp in the debates. He is rather brash, which can certainly be a turnoff, particularly with some of the things that have come out of his mouth. But the fact is, he's not one of them, per se. And them being the guys who have been in Washington pushing the buttons and shifting the levers for all of these years, that those are the guys responsible for where this country is, whether you like it or not. And it just looks like, Donald Trump is going to be, he's going to be the nominee for the Republicans. There's just, this country's in a bad mood, bad frame of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Michael's tearing up over there hearing me say all this, but I don't see anybody stopping Trump right now. He's like Nick Saban in Alabama after playing Ole Miss every year. They get unstoppable, and right now that looks like that's what Donald Trump is.
We need a Hugh Freeze to come stop the evil of Donald Trump. Even though it looks like Trump was able to, even though it looks like he has, you know, sort of an insurmountable lead, it was nice to see him just get obliterated last night. He had a horrible night last night. He was stumbling around like an idiot, which, again, is nothing new, but he was really having trouble. And then Rubio ganged up on him with Cruz, and then the moderators were getting after him. And it was, he had a bad night. He looked really bad on a lot of fronts. And I was glad that Rubio came up and said, would you just please give us some details on any policy, on any of your policies regarding foreign relations? And he just goes, you know, I know Marco Rubio. He's not a leader. He's not a leader. And Rubio said, yeah, that's, again, not details. You're not telling us anything. Yeah, well, you're not a leader, guy, so I'm sorry. And it was just amazing. it was just so great to watch. He's just such a bumbling idiot sometimes, which no matter how much he tries to convince us, you know, I have one of the highest IQs ever recorded. I'm one of the smartest people. I'm not only the best at making deals and building walls. I'm one of the smartest people. Seeing someone who's that arrogant and talks themselves up so much, seeing him just getting bashed was, I've never felt warmer in my heart. There were children laughing in the background. There were puppies just bustling around. It was just so beautiful. I was in my happy place last night watching that.
But you know, perception is everything. And how old are you, Michael? What's your age?
I'm 25.
All right, I'll be 45 in July. And to me, the funniest part last night was, it even carried over from the previous debate, was Marco Rubio attacking Trump and looking very sophomorish, if not childish, in doing so. And Trump's response of calling him Little Marco last night, I really got a kick out of that, because the more he called him Little Marco, the more he would jump up and the more insults he would fling at Trump. And Trump just kind of stood there stoically and said, okay, Little Marco. All right, Little Marco. And I thought that was funny. They did manage to work in a penis joke in the dadgum presidential debate last night. Trump gets credit for that one right off the bat last night. That's where we're at.
I don't think anyone believes that.
What's that?
I said, I don't think anyone believes Trump on that either.
I'm not even going there to even think about it. But nevertheless, I mean, come on, man. This is where we're at. And you know what? We see this in like college football, okay, and how nasty and filthy and just absolutely disrespectful the fan bases are with one another. The stuff that's put out there on Twitter. The stuff, the volatile, just insults hurled at recruits when they don't come to your school. They're the greatest thing in the world up until they commit somewhere else, and then we didn't want them. You know, that's the general line. You know, he's got one leg shorter than the other, and he's blind in two eyes. It's the same thing with politics. I mean, and I attribute both to this social media culture that we now live in. I was talking to some guys in the Ole Miss media room yesterday, and we were talking about journalism. You know, when you actually wrote a story, you spent time to write a story, you researched the story, you gathered facts, you sourced it out. You talked to more than one source. Folks, that's not the world we live in anymore. And it's not just in our college football internet world. It's in the news that you see every night on television. It's a race to be first, and it's total reckless disregard for being right. And there are more pundits and commentators giving you your quote-unquote news than there are true news people anymore. Very few of the people you turn your television set on at night. And some of this can be applied to our industry. And Michael's got a little soapbox he's going to get on with that here in just a second. But some of that can be applied to the college football industry, recruiting, team coverage, homers, as people like to say. But, man, it shouldn't be applied to real-life news, where you're turning on the TV. I don't know. I mean, who is an unbiased commentator any longer? Maybe Anderson Cooper on CNN regarding some issues, certainly not all. Maybe Bill O'Reilly on Fox. You know, the guy I like is, and he's a commentator, but Joe Scarborough on MSNBC, The Morning Show. I like his show. I think he tells it right down the middle. But guys like Sean Hannity, and I agree with most of everything Sean Hannity says, but Sean Hannity has a lean, you know. F- folks like Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. She's got a lean. Chris Matthews, MSNBC, got a lean. Don Lemon, CNN, he leans. So, you know, we talked about it earlier this week. There are no Walter Cronkites out there any longer. They just don't exist. So you have to be careful about what you're absorbing as fact on your newscast, because everyone's pushing an agenda. All right, Michael, you and I were talking earlier this morning, and you had wanted to get on your soapbox about some agenda-pushing people.
Yeah, I was about to say the exact same thing as you. There's no more Walter Cronkites. Where if you look at there's just too much money in cable news. That when you look at MSNBC, what they're doing is they're pandering to the left. It's almost, instead of watching political coverage, you're just watching cheerleaders. If you're on the left, then they're just saying what you want to hear. Fox News. Exact same way with the right. If you lean to the right and you watch Fox News, it's like you're watching cheerleaders. Everyone agrees with what you're saying. And then CNN is they're more in the middle, but it's hard to watch CNN because they're committed to the idea of journalism where first is best. And I mean, I don't know how many times we have to see CNN having to retract something or having a major correction to make, that it's really hard to find a good source of news anymore. I do like Scarborough and O'Reilly a lot. Those are two sharp guys who, you know, will sort of they'll go on both sides of the coin at times, and I really like that about both of them. But what we were talking about earlier today is I really have to commend our readership for understanding the difference between what we do and what some folks on some other sites do. I mean, I've been just screaming inside my head at some of the things I see from reporters from other sites, not within the Ole Miss networks, but from other schools, mostly from other vessels than 247 Sports. One in particular from an SEC East team that I'm sure that you could pinpoint, where there's employees for that website, the guys who run that website saying, hey, everyone, go follow this recruit and show them some love. You don't do that. That is not something that a journalist does. And if he tries to call himself a journalist, then it shouldn't be done. It's unbelievable that someone can do something like that and who condemns the sources of other websites saying, oh, don't listen to them, they're homers. It makes you just furious that someone can be so blind and just love to pander to just anyone who will listen. And it's unbelievable that the bases that listen to these guys think that they're the best. Say, oh, I love what you do. You're such a great writer. No, you're the MSNBC. You're the Fox News. You're not telling it like it is. What we do over here is we'll tell you what's going on. Well, we won't say, everyone over here, go show Recruit A some love. Or don't listen to whomever. They don't know what they're talking about over there. It's just unbelievable. I'm glad to be with a company and working with Dave and David where I don't have to worry about compromising sort of the integrity of our profession, of the position, because it's just really disgusting me to see someone like that someone who's not intrinsically involved in the situation, who's sort of blind to it, could mistake the two of us for doing the same thing, for thinking, oh, you're just like so-and-so at blank. And there are a couple people out there that I never want to ever be connected with, to ever be associated with, or to ever be compared to, because I'm frankly embarrassed that they have the job that they do and are doing what they do. And I know this sort of all goes against my kumbaya I had the other day about looking around at at everything that's good around you rather than trying to attack sort of the evils out there. But it's just something that's been barreling up inside me for a little while. In the press box the other day at one of the Louisville baseball games, I went on a little bit of a soapbox there to some of the other writers because I've just gotten tired of that crap. It is disturbing, to say the least.
All right. And the problem is, it used to be, and not so long ago, that if you were going to be in the news business, whether it's sports, politics, or whatever, you had to work for a television station or a radio station or a newspaper. And if you just went around talking crap and talking smack, everybody just thought you were a gossiper. Nowadays, though, with modern technology and the Internet, blogs and websites, and Twitter, and other social media devices, Joe Schmo from Ducktown can get online and start pumping out stuff. And if he gets enough followers and they retweet him, all of a sudden Joe Schmo is somebody on the scene who hasn't been vetted by anybody. And people start believing what Joe Schmo reports and what Joe Schmo is saying. And then all of a sudden Joe Schmo's opinion might carry some weight in some quarters. And maybe that's the way America is supposed to be. Freedom of speech, but not unlimited speech. I mean, there has to be some responsibility placed upon your speech, particularly when you're trying to communicate with the masses. And I think that's the problem. Anonymity on social media is a terrible thing. That's just my opinion, the way I see it, but it's absolutely a terrible thing. And you're going, well, that sounds crazy coming from a guy who makes his living running a message board. The posters on Rebels 247, for the most part, 99.9% of you all are very, very responsible and considerate posters. And we appreciate that because there are some sites that are not like that. Some sites that are just absolutely horrible with the language and with even the opinions. And I hand it to our subscribers. I mean, we are blessed with an excellent community of subscribers, and we appreciate that deeply. Dave Bevan, been quiet for a while. I know you've been contemplating your closing thoughts. This is going to be epic, folks. Pull over to the side of the road. Stop what you're doing. Bevan is coming out of the pen with Wild Thing playing in the background with his closing thoughts.
Well, if I sound jittery this morning, it is because I've had two energy drinks during this, just during this episode, David, as we're recording this. So, you know, the Mullins have publicly endorsed, you know, presidential candidate John Casey. I'm going to publicly, freely endorse Red Bull energy drink today, David. If you have, and David, I know you are an energy drink lover as I am. I've got a new one for you to try. Red Bull has been coming out with these limited edition, you know, flavor ones. Next time you're in the gas station, David, check out the tangerine flavor. It is an orange label Red Bull. You're going to love that. And another thing that I want to point out, David, is I am a betting man that Michael Cork could really compete and with Jimmy Fallon on his Donald Trump impersonation. Michael,
I appreciate it. I don't know if you could use it for good or evil.
Say that again?
I said, I don't know whether to use it for good or evil.
Well, it's pretty darn good. I'll say that. But, Dave, go ahead. You're on a roll there, man.
You know,
you got me drinking Tanqueray. You shoot, man. You're closing out the week strong.
Yeah, definitely. one thing that we did not mention, David, is the new addition to the Ole Miss 2016 class. Ole Miss, you know, picked up a commitment signee yesterday with Dietrich Bean Dukes out of Iowa Western. He is an added addition to that 2016 class at a very critical position at linebacker. And this is smart recruiting by Hugh Freeze and his staff, in my opinion, because it's no secret. It was completely obvious. After National Signing Day, you have signed a historic class, but there were, you know, a few misses, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, and Ole Miss hasn't, you know, quit on that, and they know that they're in some critical need areas. They picked up two linebacker commits and signees this week with you know, the Oregon State transfer Romeo Mayo, the day before Bing Dukes commits to Ole Miss, and Bing Dukes, he's a former four-star prospect out of high school out of Georgia. In 2014, he initially signed with the University of Georgia. He had 13 offers coming out of high school, so a very highly talented prospect from Georgia. He redshirted that season, then transferred to Iowa Western for the 2015 season. His initial plans was to mid-year enroll at Middle Tennessee State. He was not eligible by that after signing with Middle Tennessee State as a mid-year enrollee. So that led to his recruitment opening back up in 2016. Middle Tennessee was still pushing for him, but the Rebels caught wind of Bing Dukes' talents and offered, and couldn't turn down an SEC offer. So
I'm going to be speaking with Iowa Western Community College head coach Strohmeyer over the weekend. I already made contact with him this morning, and we're going to get his perspective on Bing Dukes, who is coming out of that Iowa Western program. My good buddy Justin Krause, who used to be on Houston Nutt's staff at Ole Miss, he previously worked at Iowa Western and was involved in Bing Dukes coming to Iowa Western, and I've spoken with him about him. He said, absolute incredible talent. He said, best kid you could ever hope to be around. So I'm certainly looking forward to getting Strohmeyer's take on Bing Dukes from the Iowa Western coaching staff perspective, and we'll have that for you coming up here in a day or so. May even get it done today, depending on coach's schedule. Michael, your closing thoughts.
We've gone final in Conway. Ole Miss closed it out with a 7-3 victory over Ball State. Dallas Woolfolk, yet again, pitched really well. It appears as though he had a 3-inning save today, which is kind of, you know, you don't really hear of that too much. It went right from Bramlett to Woolfolk, apparently. And that kid is, I can't stress how special he's going to be going forward. He touches 95 regularly and just has excellent stuff out of the bullpen. And, there's a lot of, we sort of have these linebackers coming into Ole Miss. They're under the radar. You got a lot of production out of Romel Mageo from Oregon State last year, and getting a guy who's, you know, that mature down the line. When you're expecting a true freshman to step in, it's a little different because of the maturity and knowing whether he's ready for the big time or not. Again, a guy who's played Pac-12 football, who is coming in with a lot of experience, that's big. And as when it comes to the newest addition to the team, Georgia doesn't just sign anyone at linebacker. You look at the guys that they've had over the last couple of years. Jarvis Jones, All-American, who was from Georgia, went to USC, and then transferred to UGA, first-round pick of the Steelers. Alec Ogletree, first-round pick of the now Los Angeles Rams. And, of course, Leonard Floyd and and Lorenzo Carter. They bring in so many top-notch linebackers that you really have to trust the eye of Mark Richt and that former Georgia Bulldogs staff. If they're going to bring in that guy, he has a lot of talent, and it was certainly a position of need for Ole Miss to have more linebacker depth and talent on the roster. And it's certainly helpful that, you know, guys like a DeMarcus Gates doesn't have to shoulder all the load from those two spots. So that's a big addition as well. And yeah, I'm in a good mood now. I've gotten everything off my chest I need to get off, and now it's time for some good old rice and spice. So it's a banner day for me.
If here's where I'm at. As I'm sitting here looking at Twitter flutter by, the guys in Vegas, these experts who pick these games, who's going to win, who's going to lose, if they had the accuracy of weathermen, weather people, let me be PC, meteorologists, they'd be out of work. Now, these meteorologists are pretty good at telling you if it's going to be warm or if it's going to be cold, maybe even if it's going to be windy. They sure as heck can't forecast the snow right. You know, every year we're going to have a couple of blizzards that never seem to materialize. But as I'm scrolling Twitter, here's a tweet. System may forecast tornadoes weeks away. Test it next week. What are the chances that's going to work? That they have a system now that's going to tell you 2 or 3 weeks ahead of time if a tornado is going to hit you? Because they don't know the day of if a tornado is going to hit you. You're predicting Mother Nature, which is might near impossible. So I thought I'd get that out there. I'm disappointed with where meteorology is as a whole right now. Does that bother either one of you?
That is not the first time you've mentioned hatred for meteorologists. You are no fan of those of meteorology as a whole. It doesn't sound like.
No, well, get something right sometime is all I'm going to say. You know, and now you're telling me you're going to be able to tell me almost a month ahead of time if a tornado is going to touch down in my hometown. Yeah, right. I bet that's a government-funded project. That's where I'm putting my money on, that these are taxpayer dollars at work here to create this system that's going to tell you if a tornado is going to hit you 2 or 3 weeks away. I'll believe it when I see it.
I'll tell you what, when I was living down in Key West, I actually went to the National Weather Service. They have this big, fancy building that is, they put it right in downtown Key West, right off of White Street down there, that the property value does not seem like that was the best place to put that, as it is a very expensive area and it took up a big lot. But I actually had the opportunity to go inside the National Weather Service and sort of look around in there, and to get in there, it's like a really secret sort of government deal to really... Like, you need all this different stuff, but luckily we knew some folks that let us in so we could look around for a news story. And when you get in there, it looks like the computers that you see that Samuel L. Jackson's using in Jurassic Park. They're just like these big, bulky computers. The outside, you think it's a spaceship. Just, wow, what am I about to walk into? Am I going to see some ETs in there or what? And then you go inside, it's just these big, bulky Dells from 1996 that said, yeah, that's probably why y'all don't get anything right with any of the projections, is because these things are, you still have pinball and in the Snake game and Windows 96.
Well, and the thing is, when we were talking about this earlier in the podcast, and we're going to cut this off before we get too silly here in a minute. It is Friday, so we are having a little bit of loose time here, if you will, but... weather has become big business as well, you know, and it really just makes me laugh when you've got a weather person and they're standing out in a light breeze, but they've got their rain suit on and all that stuff. Well, Bob, it's going to hit really hard here in about 3 hours. Folks are prepping. The bread's gone. The milk's gone. But it's all about creating drama. And, you know, when does the scale tip on weather like it has in news just to scare the hell out of everybody to get the ratings? And look, I am not downplaying the wonderful job local meteorologists do in warning people. There are some television stations here in the Mid-South, Matt Lawman out of Tupelo, WMC out of Memphis, that are absolutely incredible with their local coverage. But, you know, there's some drama added into particularly some of these national outfits like the Weather Channel. You know, they have reporters who go all across the country tracking devastation and destruction, and it's for ratings. It is definitely for ratings. But that's the world we live in. We're going to sign off before we get in any trouble here. Guys, as always, appreciate your time, and we appreciate the time of all our listeners that have struggled through this litany of thoughts and ideas today on the Rebel Rise Live podcast. We do have one visitor who will be on campus over the weekend, Kadir Shepherd, a potential transfer from Syracuse, dismissed from the Syracuse football team last month. He will be in Oxford. He is a defensive end, and we'll see what happens with Mr. Shepherd over the weekend. Stay tuned to Rebels 247 for all of the latest breaking Ole Miss news. Michael Quirk will have you a baseball story up on the Big Rebels' big victory out at Coastal Carolina and Myrtle Beach, and I bet they're headed to a Hooters to celebrate. So we'll let them do that. We'll let you carry on. Thank you for listening once more. For Dave Bevan, Michael Quirk, I'm David Johnson, and as always, hotty totty.